You know, every time I speak, I want the truth to come out. You know what I'm saying? Every time I speak, I want to share. You know, I don't want them to be like, they know what I'm going to say because it's polite. They know what I'm going to say. And even if I get in trouble, you know what I'm saying? That ain't that what we're supposed to do? I'm not saying I'm going to rule the world or I'm going to change the world, but I guarantee that I will spark the brain that will change the world.
I think what you're trying to ask is, why am I so insistent upon giving out to them that blackness, that black power, that black pushing them to identify with black culture? I think that's what you're asking. Is I have no choice over it. In the first place, to me, we are the most beautiful creatures in the whole world, black people. I mean, and I mean that in every sense, outside and inside. And to me, we have a culture that is surpassed by no other civilization, but we don't know anything about it. So again, I think I said this before in this same interview. I think at some time before, my job is to somehow make them curious enough or persuade them by hook or crook to get more aware of themselves and where they came from and what they are into and what is already there, and just to bring it out. This is what compels me to compel them. And I will do it by whatever means necessary.
I am your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Latrice Ross. And welcome to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. We are the return of intelligent radio, as we ensure the free flow of opinions and push the envelope on the questions America's afraid to ask in the mainstream media. Good morning, Latrice. Thank you, Queen, for being on with me this morning. I think you're on the road, if you will, but again, appreciate you for getting in on this thing. Glad to have you. Black, as I like to say. And so, if you will, before we introduce our special guest, if you will, tell the people who you are. I think it's been a little minute since you've co-hosted with me, so they know you are one of our Queens of Intellect members, but if you will, just give people a little bit of your background before we introduce our guests.
Sure. Good morning, Montoya, Janelle, and I'm Latrice Ross. Happy to be here with you guys again. My background is I'm a diversity, equity, and inclusion consultant. I've worked with organizations for the last 10, 12 years to ensure that they provide equitable opportunities within their organization for all employees to advance and achieve success, working with government agencies, for-profit organizations, non-profit organizations. Love the work that I do. It's one of those things that I would do even if I didn't get paid for it.
No, love it. And our returning guest, Janelle King, you don't need a real introduction if you've always been, and if you will, willing to participate in these conversations. And so we had a lovely opportunity to do the same thing last night at the Mental Dialogue Live experience. Before we get into that experience, if you will, Queen, give people a little bit of your background as well. But thank you for being on the show again, Janelle.
Thank you for having me, and good morning, Latrice. I'm Janelle King. I am a media personality. I'm on the Fox 5 Atlanta, the Georgia gang. I represent the Republican side of the conversation. I also have my own podcast and radio show called Let's Talk About It with Janelle King. That is on everywhere you can get a podcast. And then the radio show airs every Saturday at 4 p.m. on Extra 106. So I'm just happy to be here and be able to continue the conversation.
No, absolutely. And so, yeah, let's jump a little bit into last evening's conversation. For those outside of Atlanta, I do a live event once a month at Urban Grind, which is a black-owned coffee shop here in the Midtown area of Atlanta. And so, and some of the newer listeners may not be aware, but that coffee shop initially started in the barbershop years ago is really why we're here every Saturday. The barbershop event eventually was requested to, in a sense, be on the radio some years ago, and I was actually on terrestrial radio some years ago. That station back in South Carolina decided to go online, and so I, in a sense, followed suit and went online myself, and here we are every Saturday live having these tough discussions on race, sex, and culture, but highlighting last night's Mental Dialogue Live experience. I had Janelle as well as her husband, Kevin King, both noted Republicans here in the Georgia, in Atlanta specifically, in the Atlanta area, but of course throughout the state, whereas Kelvin, Janelle's husband, was a senatorial candidate here recently, and as Janelle gave her background, she is a on-air personality live on Georgia Gang Fox 5. So again, with that background for this morning's discussion, what would you ask a black Republican? She is, in a sense, the perfect person to ask that. But speaking of last night's live experience, just any initial thoughts about last night, just to kind of let the people out there listening, in a sense, know what they missed, if you will, in your opinion, Queen?
Yeah, absolutely. So I thought last night was definitely a emotional experience. You know, it's always interesting to come in there and be within the community and have these conversations. While I do know that there were times where it got really heated, really emotional, what I really enjoyed and what I heard from the people that was there was two things. One, they really appreciated even after the show, that the event ended, us just standing outside, and we all kind of paired up and had our own individual discussions, which was really cool. And then, secondly, the thing that we heard the most was that there were people that, while they may not have agreed with everything that we said, they appreciated us being there and being able to have the conversation and getting on the hot seat. So we're looking forward to doing it again in a different format, but we're definitely going to have more of those conversations, and we're definitely going to continue to support Mental Dialogue.
Oh, thank you again. Thanks for the opportunity. And so with that said, I'll give my thoughts real quick. Again, Latrice, I know you're on the road today to do a speaking engagement in your hometown. I'd just like to highlight for the listeners out there, because, again, you are a Mental Dialogue member, and we love to hear when y'all are out in the community doing y'all thing. But again, thank you, Queen, for being with me this morning. But I'll say last night was simply ask a black Republican. Again, that's how it was promoted, if you will. I will say I made an attempt to make it the typical Mental Dialogue in which we have conversations and try to dialogue through things. And I'll highlight this for those that don't know, especially for our newer listeners. As much as I love to applaud the fact that at Mental Dialogue, I say we are the best in the world at conversations on race, sex, and culture. Latrice and Janelle, you know this as well, that for the most part, two topics I typically stay away from within those conversations are politics and religion, if you will. And my thinking behind it is typically people's beliefs about those two issues are typically so strong that what typically does not take place is listening to the other side. And so when I say typically we have these, if you will, these hard conversations and people are in a sense willing to listen to one another, that's what we do best. With politics and religion, that's the one place it typically does not happen. And so I will admit that last night's event delved between some listening and what I would say is the typical political fodder of where, in a sense, people's positions are so strong or people are so triggered by positions within the politics that, as Janelle said, you know, to be fair, is it did get emotional and, in a sense, away from the dialogue, if you will. So that's what I'll, in a sense, say about last night. Definitely got you know, various feedback from, you know, for those that it was emotional, they didn't like that side of it. For those who hadn't been in the environment before, got good feedback in the sense that we, in a sense, made the attempt. And so I don't know if this morning will be, again, another attempt. But at the end of the day, when I do touch politics, my ultimate goal is just to be able to show that dialogue can be had. And I hope that, in a sense, that's what this morning is. And for the listeners out there, if you're tuned in, we definitely want y'all to get involved and ask your questions when it comes to this morning's discussion question, which is, what would you ask a black Republican? What would you ask a black Republican? So, yeah, for those of you on the line, actually, we got Kelvin jumping on here with us. I know you had a little prior engagement right before this morning, so let's go ahead and get him introduced as one of our guests as well. Hey, what's up, Kevin?
Good morning.
Hey, glad to have you on. As I always call my guest King, but you are, that is literally who you are, Kevin King, if you will.
So literally.
Yeah, literally.
Yep. It's not. I'm not exacerbating, and I'm not embellishing. I am a king. I've been a king
absolutely
for 49 years. But yeah, I appreciate you letting me call in, and thanks for hosting last night. The format was a little strange, but I know a lot of good people, and I hope that this morning is a little bit different, where we can get more thoughts out and explanation. And yeah, thanks a lot. I've known you since college. I'm an Air Force Academy grad, Air Force veteran. I own a construction company here in Georgia born and raised, and ran for U.S. Senate the last cycle. So that's a little bit about my background. And I've been a Republican for almost 30 years, right when I graduated college.
Nah, sounds good. Thank you for that quick background. Definitely wanted to get you introduced. We're up against the initial break, as I always got to get my sponsorship information out there. So we're going to go ahead and go to a quick break and come hot back and get hot and heavy on what would you ask a black Republican. We'll be right back. All I ask is that you think.
Hey, are you a wine drinker?
A little bit here and there, but my wife definitely loves hers. Why you ask?
Man, you got to try this vegan wine by Sip and Share Wines. I ran across them at this event in Atlanta, and now I keep me a few bottles at the house. What flavor you like?
I like me a good red or maybe a nice dipping deal or something. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, try the sweet red first.
That's nice and smooth right there. Yeah, that's kind of sweet like I like it. You know what I'm talking about?
For sure, that's why I like that one as well. Hey, now try this Conjure Zinfandel. This one was featured in Forbes magazine as a top 10 drink for the summer. See what you think.
Oh, okay, now that's fire right there. Where can I get a bottle of that?
Just go to sipandsharewines.com. They'll ship it right to your door. They black on, too.
Oh, yeah? Okay, you said what? Sipandsharewines.com, is that it?
Yep.
Bad.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Latrice Ross. Our special guests are Kevin and Janelle King, both GOP members, if you will. And this morning's discussion question is, what would you ask a black Republican? Latrice, I'm going to let you, in a sense, jump us off and just keep it simple this morning. And if I remember correctly, just in a quick dialogue, I think you will make some reference to, I guess, maybe some differences within conservatism and a republic, you know, being a Republican, if you will. So if you will, Queen, just get us started on this dialogue, if you will.
Sure. I think it's important to, establish, justice and how they divide themselves. And so my question is...
Hey, look, Teresa, it's a little tougher to hear you this time. I don't know if maybe it's where you're located.
All right.
Yeah.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, that's a big difference.
Is that better?
Yeah, big difference. Yeah, a lot better.
Okay.
Yeah, a lot better.
All right. So what I wanted to ask is how you define yourself within that space. Do you consider yourself to be black Republicans or black conservatives? Because there is a difference between the two, although the terms are used interchangeably at times.
I'll answer that. You're exactly right. Republicanism, conservatism. Oh, man. Sorry about that. That's my dog.
No problem.
There is a difference, I think. I think conservatism is a much more broad definition. Republicanism is really more of a political party angle. And I define myself as both. I'm a conservative Republican. I believe in Republicanism. And obviously, I believe in conservatism. Most of us were raised with generally conservative values.
Okay, Janelle. Go ahead, Queen.
Yeah, I agree too. That's a great question. I'm a little different when it comes to that. I say Republican because those are the two party systems that are major two party systems, and that's where I vote. I vote Republican. But as a person, I feel like I more so align with the people who consider themselves to be a constitutionalist, and I also have a libertarian bent to a certain degree. So I would say that I lean more into the conservatism side, where I would say that I'm more of a black conservative because I do have some libertarian bent that are not necessarily, you know, accepted on the Republican side or, you know, a part of the Republican platform.
thank you for that. But let me ask you actually, I guess clarify a little bit, because I was doing some work and I actually saw where how they, I guess, have adapted the definition of Black conservatism to where they identify, they're defining Black conservatives as those who have conservative values, typically vote Republican, but are known to still fight against what's happening now with the Republican Party as it relates to racism, meaning that they still speak up about those issues that are important to Black people and speak out against the racism that's becoming so broadly expressed within the Republican Party.
That's another good point, and I will say that this in our world, now I'm not sure where that definition came from, but I'll speak for us in just being Black conservatives. We when we do speak against racism, we speak against racism in its totality, not just in the Republican Party, because for us, we deal with racism all the time. And when we do, it typically for us comes from white liberals. So it's not something that we see in our party when for us as an individual. That being said, we acknowledge the fact that racism does exist and that it exists in the hearts of people all across the board. So I'm not saying there aren't Republicans that are racist, but for us, we don't deal with racism within the Republican Party, because that's to assume that racism is only within the Republican Party, and it's not. So we like to deal with it from a totality perspective. And not only that, but we also like to focus in on the ways in which we could still be successful as Black people without having to make racism the focus, because there are ways to be successful, considering the fact that majority of people that are that you interact with, that they're not racist. There may be some ideological differences. There may be some biases. There may even be some prejudice. But racism is a little bit different, a little bit deeper, and it's definitely more connected to a heart issue than a legislative issue. So for us as Black conservatives, yes, I do tend to be more conscious, if I will, when it comes to the Black community and how we're impacted politically than some people who identify as Republican. But it's not racism within the Republican Party.
No.
Yeah,
and I
just want to add. Let me let
Kevin jump in real quick, Latrice, just real
okay.
If he wants to. Yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to just add to my wife's comments. Yeah, that's exactly how I feel as well. I see racism as something that I think you're speaking towards Black white racism. That's what I'm going to assume. But I see racism as something that definitely exists. It's in the hearts of the racist people. I don't define it as a Republican thing. Like my wife said, it's just it's what it is. It's a total issue or problem, and it's as we always say, it's a hard issue. So because racism is intentionally, from our perspective, it's intentionally managed just like any other challenge in this world, and we kind of weigh it based on the impact to our lives, and we've been able to categorize racism as something that is real, exists, but it has very little impact on our lives, particularly here in America.
Okay, so I just wanted to add that definition was specifically how I saw Black conservatives defined as in fighting the racism within that party, and at times that may determine that they vote differently. But to your point, Janelle, racism is a Black and white thing, and so it is – it's in both parties. It's a hard issue, as you both indicated. But I just wanted to clarify, because I do recognize with the work that I do that it's racism exists everywhere and in both parties, independents, et cetera.
Makes sense. We got to think.
Let me see. I think
this number. It might be. I think I know this number. This might be Brother Pianchi out of St. Louis. This is Brother Pianchi. Is this you, brother? Oh, actually, no, this is William. William, is it you, brother? I think this is William's number. I think
you know
number,
what?
Number.
That's me. I'm sorry. I was on mute. Oh, okay. I was going to tell you happy Father's Day, but I'm going to have to reserve it.
You're trying to fake me out this morning, man. I'm like, I know
you. Hey, wait a minute. I'm going to have to reserve happy Father's Day with you. I forgot.
Hey, you come on the show clowning.
It's good to hear another conservative that's in the construction industry. I was for over 40 years. It's still erected, but I like the comments that's being made in the rare form. We're always resorting to racism. You know, there's racism in Nigeria, where the country is 99% black. So the racism has no respect for skin color, sex, nor height or weight. It's the act that in this country, when you violate a person's civil rights, well, then you have created a discrimination. You have done something wrong to them. But no, there is a difference between the two ideologies, and that's okay. I myself is conservative, and most of the conservative issues that I adhere to is usually carried on by the Republican Party, but I have also supported Democrats that had conservative issues that I was in agreement of, like, for instance, school choice with vouchers and border protection and tariffs on imports that harm our particular industry or really the industries in the United States. Hey, look, Georgia and the Georgia Pines, your softwood industry has been hurt due to the fact that the tariffs from lumber coming from Canada is now causing your industry to, you know, have a suffering. So, no, it's the ideology, it's the difference in the policy. Sometimes it follows, a lot of times it's followed on economic and educational attainment. And there is a difference. And it goes against the idea that we all the same, but there is a difference.
I appreciate you, Brother Pianchi, one of our longtime listeners. And appreciate your thoughts, King. So with that said,
thank you, sir.
I think, oh, no, absolutely. One thing with that said, I think that was just, I think it's a nice piece of clarity because, again, love that original question, Latrice. And Brother Pianchi just kind of highlighted it, the idea of when you're saying that difference between conservatism and, in a sense, our guests voting Republican or being Republican, you know, is there a difference? I think Brother Pianchi just highlights that conservatism and liberal, which, again, words that are thrown around, and like you said, Latrice, often are used interchangeably, and Brother Pianchi rightly points out that you can be conservative in either party. And, and just to highlight, again, just in particulars for anyone, when you ask that question, as you clarified, and so I want to kind of reiterate this just so that it is clear, you were just particularly asking, in a sense, black conservatives, because again, conservatism can run the gamut between Democrat and Republican. And so you were just highlighting that black conservatives are often seen standing up within the party, but you wasn't highlighting that it was just in the party. Because at the end of the day, there's no way you can reduce, if you will, racism to be in any particular group. But with that said, here's a quick question that I would highlight and ask, both of our guests. Speaking of racism, it's just this, there again, while racism is clearly in both parties, do Janelle and Kevin, do y'all recognize the tendency for those who are openly and outright racist, in a sense, the things that we see that anybody, if you will, if anybody in the country would say that is actually, in a sense, a racist act. Are you aware that there's a tendency of those who are, I would say, openly ignorant, if you will? I also would agree that that is the minority of the country, if you will. But do you acknowledge that group in particular seems to openly support the GOP? Do y'all see that acknowledgement? Because outside looking in, that's what I think I see. And I say outside because I am a political independent that
votes both parties, if you will. So I'll say outside from that standpoint. Do y'all acknowledge that that seems to be the case for me as an outsider? Do y'all acknowledge that or see that?
I acknowledge that that is the narrative that has been pushed through media and propaganda, because if I look at my individual life, and if I look at, and if I speak to people, even Democrats that I've spoken with, they rarely even interact with Republicans or people who identify as hardcore Republicans. And when I look at what's happened in my own life, I mean, when I get on social media and I'm called a monkey, a bed witch, my cousin is called Uncle Tom, we're called blackface and all that, it's coming from white liberals and some black liberals. So for us, I can't acknowledge the fact that that's primarily on the GOP side, because it comes primarily from the liberal side for me personally. But with respect to the fact that that's a personal experience, what I can acknowledge is that whenever it comes to promoting conservatism, that's where racism goes. Prime example, we have one black man who's running for president right now on the Republican ticket in the primary, and former President Obama comes and he decides that instead of going after the top three that are, well, the top two that are leading right now in the primary, he goes for the single-digit black conservative. And he basically says, now here to the black community now, like, you know, I feel like Obama is a huge gatekeeper. And what his message was to the black community is, I'm skeptical of what Tim Scott is saying regarding racism. In other words, you should be too. I'm not going to tell you that what he's saying is wrong. I'm not going to tell you what I don't like about what he's saying. All I'm going to say is that I'm skeptical. And then that creates this division where I feel that particularly the black community, who tends to look at President Obama, former President Obama and Michelle Obama as examples, they tend to, that type of rhetoric creates that narrative. So if you're being told by majority of mainstream media that the Republican Party houses all majority of the minority group of racist people in this country, then I absolutely understand why you may feel that way. But we like to encourage people to get out and go. Like, go to a GOP meeting. Go to a state convention. Go to these into the environment where GOP people are and where we consistently reside, and create your own experience, and then tell me if you will have that same reaction.
Let me ask one thing real quick.
Answer that question.
Let me do this, brother, if you will, and then you can definitely still ask, piggyback. I just wanted to highlight, just trying to understand something that she said. Like the encouragement at the end makes a lot of sense. Like you said, if you believe that narrative, as you just said, then you encourage people to actually have the experience and kind of figure it out for themselves. That makes sense. I guess I'm just out of clarity. I just want to understand, because I don't understand the Obama reference to Tim Scott in a sense. I don't understand how it relates to the question as far as people who assume that narrative. Yeah. I'm missing how that connects. I'm just trying to understand. I don't see the connection.
Okay, so the connection I was attempting to make, I'll clarify that, is that oftentimes I was kind of lumping that into what I was saying about the media driving a narrative. Whenever it comes to, like Tim Scott has so many different platform items. I'm here. Can you hear me? I can hear you.
I hear you too.
I think we lost Montoya.
I think we lost him. Well, I just wanted to ask something while he gets back on.
I can't hear you, Latrice. We can barely hear you.
I had to take it off the car audio. So my question is, you know, perhaps racism is not the term I was actually looking for, because racism does exist everywhere. And when it comes to black people who identify as Republicans, I know that black people can be extremely mean-spirited and hateful in the things that they say. that and I'm sure you experience a lot of that on social media. I think that comes from a place of ignorance, just like I think that what I think that a lot of the racism that we see comes from a place of ignorance, period. But perhaps what I needed to, how I needed to frame my question is focus on the white supremacy that many are diminishing of blackness. For instance, with the so-called move to remove CRT from our elementary and in the high schools, it was never there. It's a college level concept. But what they're masking as removing CRT, they're masking removing the true history of this country. When it comes to, you know, gerrymandered districts, they're trying to dilute the voting power of black folks so that their candidates can vote. So how do you acknowledge that, or do you acknowledge that that's an issue within the party?
I'll let Kelvin start that off, and then I can come and get my point.
Yeah. Regarding gerrymandering, I think that is a political strategy to try to get votes. So it does happen, and both sides do it. That's just what it is. It's a political strategy. It's not a racially racism attempt to do anything in terms of, you know, keeping the black man down. It's a political strategy. And in terms of the CRT, I'm with you. I mean, I won't ever support initiatives that's going to erase American history when it comes to black people's contributions. And, you know, that's something that's near and dear to my heart, because studying black American history is how I became a Republican. So I'm with you in terms of wanting to keep that back, but I also understand the side when the Republican movement tries to push CRT, critical race theory. You know, it's based in critical theory. The racism part, the race part, is something that's just uniquely America, because race is so divisive in America. So it's being used as a tool for division. And when I hear arguments that we're keeping history away from, you know, keeping black history away from the masses, I disagree, because there's no curriculum that eliminates black history in our country. What we are seeing, however, is the divisiveness weapon of CRT to create the outrage in the black community by making it seem as if black history is not American history, and that is absolutely incorrect. So I think it's based on how it's being sold versus how it's being implemented. I would never support any sort of elimination of American history and the black man's contribution to American history. And Smitty or Montoya mentioned the racism in our party. And I do believe that that exists. I think we've all acknowledged that several times. But there's also an angle that I'm starting to kind of see, and that is, I think that there's a lot of fear that's being presented, or at least people think it's racism, by people in the Republican Party, because I've talked to folks that I believe members on this call would call racist in our Republican Party. And this is just my thought. And they seem to fear how we're losing certain values on the liberal side, and it's looking like, you know, black fists in the air, and that looks weird to them. And they're not understanding what the rage or the discomfort is, because it's not being communicated to them properly. So when we talk to them about what we think is happening in terms of what the rage or whatever you want to call it is, you know, they're like, well, I'm not, I don't, I don't subscribe to over-policing. You know, I don't subscribe to any of these previously thought of racist acts that's coming, you know, to the black community. Like they think they're disconnected, but at the same time, they do fear what they're seeing coming at them with the black fist in the air, because they see looting and misbehavior, and that is intimidating. So there is definitely a disconnect. But who treats us as racist, like my wife was saying earlier, I mean, it's people who – racism is, you know, you thinking that your race is superior to the other race, and oftentimes bad things come out of that. When a white woman tells my wife how to raise her black children, saying that she doesn't know how to do that, to me that's a racist statement. And that happened to my wife on stage, and mm-hmm. I didn't see anybody upset other than us, right? And that was a liberal mm-hmm. white woman. So that's to talk about racism, you've got to be fair with how you assess racism, and you have to ask deeper questions to make sure you understand what is that concern coming from. I think that is really more the problem, is the disconnect that's happening when we talk about that term racism.
And to answer your question, Latrice, about
– okay,
no problem. I'm going to be real quick because Kelvin hit the nail on the head, and I think three things. So gerrymandering has shifted to me in why – like the focus of gerrymandering has shifted a lot, and I'm glad Kelvin brought that up. It's become very political. When I look at maps, and having worked over a decade in the Republican Party, and I've looked at maps that were redistricting or redrawn – based on when Democrats were in power, and it looks just as weird and funky as it does when Republicans are in power, because it is very much so a political thing. As a black conservative, I have seen, like, there's instances where we were drawn out of districts because I know it's because of the fact that we're black. They're not looking at our political record. They're looking at the fact that majority of black people statistically are Democrats. So it's not necessarily like I want to get rid of black people. It's just that statistically, you're typically Democrat and we want Republican votes. And I've also been cut into districts because they assume that I vote Democrat. So that has happened on both sides. When it comes to CRT, I think that both sides of the argument have to be honest about something. The Republicans have to be honest about the fact that, you know, okay, the actual term critical race theory, the actual the curriculum that's being taught in college campuses is not what we're seeing taught in elementary school. So we do have to be honest about that. However, on the other side, there needs to be an honest discussion around the information and the messaging, because there are, when I walk into some of these elementary schools, these middle schools, and I hear that they're separating kids based on, this is actually happening in some schools, where they're separating kids based on the color of their skin. Like, you know, you're the mulatto group, you're the moon pie. They're creating all these groups, and they're trying to help people understand race and how to interact. That's still a part of critical race theory. And whenever I see black history curriculums that have a queer theory pushed in it almost like a Trojan horse, that's another problem that we have. And that's a lot of times what we're pushing back on. I don't think anybody really nobody wants to – let me not say that. I'll say this. For us, we want to see accurate black history taught. We're hoping that it is taught. I have to note that, particularly in Florida, that was another misconception, because we ran, and actually my bonus son ran through the full bill that the Florida legislators put forward as it relates to removing that particular AP Studies African-American class, and they didn't remove the whole thing. They only pulled out the queer theory stuff out of it and kept the curriculum based on black history. So that's something else that's been misconstrued through the media. And lastly, when Kelvin mentioned interacting with some, we interact with some white people who I'm sure people will assume that they're racist simply, you know, just from the first glance, they may have the Confederate flag. And a lot of times we identify that with, you must be a racist if you have a Confederate flag on your car or whatever. And so when we've had those conversations with those people, there is a huge disconnect. We have to keep in mind that we are holding white people today to the we're holding them to the sin of white people from 400 years ago, right? So we're hoping that they understand why we're so emotional around our experience, when in fact we're talking to people who are only about 50, 60 years old. So at the end of the day, they may have an idea, but today's concept is a little bit different. And so there just has to be more of a dialogue on both ends.
I actually agree with that last statement, that there needs to be more of a dialogue on both ends. And a lot of it is education. We can say that, you know, slavery ended and you know, that folks who are alive today did own slaves, et cetera. But they benefit from the privilege that is woven into the very fabric of this country. When we think about pay equity, there's a study that shows that black people won't reach pay parity, wage parity, for 95 years. That's a problem. There is research that shows, I mean, Kelvin, you brought up over-policing. That's a problem. There are issues within the healthcare system, which is why black women who are pregnant die at an alarmingly higher rate than other races. The reason that the opioid epidemic didn't impact black people in this instance, was a good thing for us. But the reason that the opioid epidemic didn't impact black people is because doctors thought that black people are drug seeking. No, I can't.
Oh, you can't hear me? I got knocked off on the mic. I'm trying to come in via the phone. I got knocked off, so I'm glad y'all have been able to, in a sense, continue the conversation.
Okay.
If I could kind of interject, and I'll even say this as I'm listening to you, if you will, Queen, in the sense of this dialogue. And I hear what you're saying, Latrice, and the only thing I'm just kind of pointing out that, in a sense, while I respect, in a sense, those things in the dialogue that I would, if I could, just kind of interact, because, again, I could hear things, but I couldn't get in and talk. And so the thing that I will say that, Janelle, I love that you addressed, if in a sense of asking a black Republican, if you will, that, like you said, acknowledging the difference between what CRT actually is, and Latrice was actually on that dialogue when we did a show on CRT, and we definitely made the distinction that how politics will kind of broad brush things, and so that has become the term that is, in a sense, unfairly being used as, in a sense, what's being taught in schools. And so the unfortunate reality of that misunderstanding is that you know, like you said, the example of, you know, what you're against of the particulars that are put into the curriculum. Here's also the unfortunate reality, and both sides can point to these things of CRT in being misnomered or misused as of what's being used in the schools. Well, the particulars of how it's playing out is, for example, this morning I just happened to see this, the language of how black history is taught, like that is actually being changed around, and both parties have to acknowledge that the CRT as a term is being misused to do, as you said, for example, you know, just using that as an example, somehow queer theory being pushed inside of history don't necessarily go together, and don't know that parents would want that necessarily taught in school. But for example, you're also seeing curriculums remove the word slavery, and like that is happening as well. And as black people, and to Kevin's point, we don't want to see black history removed and it's talked about in this extreme. But when you get into particulars, that's what typically is not being acknowledged by both sides. And I am curious, you know, what do we, Latrice included, what do we think that looks like? Like, how do we get into to the particulars? Because the particulars are playing out, in my opinion, in a very ugly way. I'll kind of throw it back to you, Janelle, because you mentioned that first about CRT being misused in a sense within the way we look at it.
Yeah, I agree. I think, and I'm glad we're having this conversation, because we don't support removing slavery. no more than I support removing monuments, because I feel like it's the same concept, right? So I just think we have to be focused on the fact that our history is not as clean as people want it to be, and it's also not as ugly as people want it to be. I think that there is a we kind of lean into our biases, and we tell the story based on what we think that our experience was for our people. And that's a problem regardless of who's telling the story, if you're doing that. So let's just be accurate about it, but let's remove assumptions. And I think that's where we have to start when it comes to you, like you said, pointing out the particulars. Let's just remove the assumptions and just give people what it is. And let us all digest what it is, right? Because I believe that when we do that, it'll all come out kind of in the wash. Like, we'll all be able to see a really good, clear picture of who we are. And I also think sometimes that we eliminate or we seem to forget that we're dealing with human nature and hindsight. So in hindsight, we have a much better picture of what things that were, of how things were done and what was wrong with it, right? We have outcomes now that we can attach to those decisions. But a lot of times in the moment is where we lose sight of the human nature part of it. And I say this happens on both sides, you know? Like, I look at some of the policies that were put in place during the 60s that was supposed to benefit black people. I listened to interviews where black people were complaining even back then about some of the policies. Prime example,
I'm sorry, Queen, sorry to cut you off. I do have to take care of my sponsors. I got knocked off, so I need to catch up just a little bit there. I see several callers, too. For all of the callers that are out there, if you are trying to get in, press 1, and we'll let you ask a question as well. Let me jump to this quick break. Again, do apologize for that break. But I got knocked off, so let me take care of this real quick. We'll be right back. We're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think. Having some trouble with the board this morning, y'all. Forgive me. I got knocked offline, so I'm trying to run everything from my phone. Just give me a second. All right, here we go. We'll be right back. LNG Technology Services, we are your industry leader in aircraft and heavy equipment repair services. In commercial business for over 15 years, LNG technicians have over 150 years of equipment-specific knowledge and are known industry-wide for returning worn-out, broken, and overused ground support equipment back to the user in working better than new conditions. For a service job done right at a value unparalleled in the industry, contact LNG Technology Services at 478-781-4860. Again, for a service job done right, that number is 478-781-4860. LNG Technologies is a Mental Dialogue Gold member and proud sponsor of the Mental Dialogue community.
What's about to turn for our polling station?
Young man. We know a shorter route to your, to our Democratic polling station. You know how us Democrats like a shortcut, like government spending to prop up the economy.
Nothing more we love than those, federal programs.
You two are Democrats, aren't you?
What? Of course we are.
You see the color of our skin, don't you? How can we not blindly vote Democratic?
I mean, that would be ridiculous.
Whatever. All I know is my polling place closed in 15 minutes.
Why, that would be terrible. Awful. I mean, how are you going to elect tax and spend politicians if you can't vote?
It's hard enough to vote with all those voter ID laws. Republicans.
Gosh darn Republicans.
I know, I'm just like, grrrr.
Lieutenant Sue Douglas.
Right. You know, if there were any Republicans here, I'd be pissed. I'd be royally pissed.
Me too.
In fact, I would take their hard-fought principles and I'd shove it right up their keisters.
We seem to be driving in circles.
Don't worry, we're almost there. Look, it appears we've hit somebody. We should get out and help him.
Oh, my leg. I am pissed.
What?
I'm royally pissed.
Now, although it was only this one man's fault, I will be using all of your tax dollars to get healthy. thanks to the Affordable Health Care Act. I know it doesn't seem fair, but that's supposedly the law of the land nowadays.
That's what I've heard.
You don't look that hurt.
Why y'all wearing those same leather jackets and those dad jeans?
Disperse!
Black Republican motherfucker!
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates. This morning, discussion question, what would you ask a black Republican? My special guest co-host is Latrice Ross. Our special guests are Kevin and Janelle King. I play a humorous cut from Key and Peele. We like to bring some humor into these dialogues. We can't laugh at ourselves. We are less human. We actually have a caller that wants to get in. Area code 215, last 3175. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your 3 cents on this morning's discussion. Area code 215, you're live on the air.
Yes, sir. I'm finding this program. I happened upon it. One of my friends, and she suggested I call in. I wanted to ask a question. You know, there are many positions that I agree with in terms of the Republican position, but I would like to ask a question of those in the Republican Party. Why are Republicans, certainly on the federal level, all too often indifferent and even ableist in considering the unique needs of people with disabilities? I've been involved with ADAPT, the organization that's international, I mean actual national, in the Philadelphia area. And I've been to Harrisburg, and I've been to naturally Washington, D.C., to fight for issues that would protect persons with disabilities. I myself have cerebral palsy. And I just wonder why we always find opposition from legislators in particular who seem to always want to either cut, deny, even cut out in terms of certainly roll back benefits that impact the lives of people with disabilities. So though I'm in agreement with a lot of issues, you know, that the Republicans are involved in, you know, in terms of points of interest, I certainly have a problem. That's one issue that I have. That's why I'm. That's why I become independent instead of a Republican, because I really am out on the out with the Democrats on so many issues: the moral issue, the ethical issues, abortion, gun laws, and other things like that. I'm in opposition with Democrats in that regard. But I cannot embrace the Republican Party either, primarily, because of the somewhat situations we've had with trying to meet with them, trying to negotiate with them, trying to get them to see our perspective as people with disabilities. There are 60 million people in this country with disabilities. We're the largest minority group in the country. Most people will eventually become a part of our community before they die. And yet we're the most ignored, ostracized, and really minimized in terms of, we certainly are disenfranchised as it relates to both parties, actually, but in particular the Republican Party. What do you say about that?
Okay, let me say your name again, so I just missed it, if you don't mind. Give me your name again. I'm sorry.
Gerald Scott.
Okay, Gerald. Yeah, no,
Bishop.
Thank you, Gerald. I don't know, Kevin. I don't know. Well, either one of you can jump in, but
yeah, I can jump in on that one.
Yeah, okay, I can make a couple comments too.
Okay. No, you will. Yeah, give. Yeah. No, I know we don't have y'all for a lot of time, so yeah, jump in if y'all will.
Mine is really quick.
Go ahead.
Okay. I'm really, really fast. I appreciate him calling in and saying that, because I do think on the Republican side, we do not do a good job when it comes to the healthcare discussion, when it comes to anything related to medical needs and all of that. I didn't know that it was so specific to the disability community. That's something I'm going to personally look into. But I will say that I think it's connected to how we feel about certain entitlement programs. And a lot of times we don't communicate that what we really want to do is remove people that are benefiting from or that are pulling funds from people like this gentleman, because it's going towards other programs or it's going towards other people who are able-bodied, and they're just still utilizing these benefits. So I think sometimes it gets mixed up there, but I'm definitely going to look more deep into that issue.
And the only other thing I can add to that, because that is a great question, is that we typically have an angle or a bent or a bias to limiting what our government does in terms of picking winners and losers. We like to push back on government involvement that way. So maybe in that particular case, which I need to know more about it specifically, maybe in that case it fell within that category.
Now, it makes a lot of sense as I listen to y'all. Gerald, I'll give you a quick response if you can just make it quicker. I'll just do a few minutes before we go to break, and I got to let both of my guests go. But thank you for an excellent question. But I think I'm just kind of hearing that, unfortunately, the way politics plays out, some issues get lumped in, and there's an overarching thing that even the politicians would have to figure out, how do I narrow out this part? Because it's not that we're against this particular group, but the way it's a lot of things are lumped in, if you will, on a bill. That's what I think I'm hearing. But, Gerald, how is that? How do you receive that? I don't think we have an answer for you, if you will, just based on them being very honest about what they see. But just, you know, what's your quick response to that? Because I think we all would agree there has to be some way to do it. I don't know what the simple way would be to do it. But thank you for that question this morning.
Okay, Edison, can I quickly respond very quickly?
Yeah. I want you to go ahead.
Very quick. It'll take less than a minute.
Okay, thank you. No, you're good. You're good.
I agree. Okay. Very quickly, I agree that sometimes people that really need it are being denied it because people that aren't as in need are receiving it. And I agree with that. I think the Republican Party needs to be, as you mentioned just a minute ago, more exact, more specific about their targeting, because many times we do construe when you talk about health care, when you're talking about we can't get adaptive equipment like we should and could because we still have the money and nor the resources from the state to provide these things, or even the federal government for that matter, to provide these necessary services to make us on an even keel with every other citizen in this nation. I think they need to really, like you said a moment ago, fine-tune it, pinpoint it, what they're targeting, and then maybe even tell the disability community if we could get rid of those hangers-ons and people that don't deserve to be on these programs, we will be able to divert the monies that they receive to you so that instead of you getting minimum amount of monies and benefits, you now can get the full benefits that you need to become like every other citizen seeking justice and equality and being able to have an independent life.
Nah, thank you very much. Great question, Gerald. Appreciate that. Well, I don't have my special guest now for a couple of more minutes, so if you will, I'm going to let y'all kind of say your, if you will, goodbye, share with anyone any information y'all want to put out publicly. I know y'all get some of that at the beginning, but for those who may have just now tuned in, but again, thank you both for being on for What Would You Ask a Black Republican? And so if either of you get out, give out.
I can hang on.
And thank you for both being on. Go ahead.
I can hang on for another about 30 minutes.
Okay. So we'll keep.
Yeah, I can hang on for another 30 minutes. I don't know, Kelvin. Kelvin, can you?
Yeah.
So well, actually, okay. Actually, for my I have Leo Smith set to come on for the next hour because again I didn't anticipate having you guys, so I'm just ideally, you know, just setting it up.
Oh no, that's great. No, he's great. He's great. We can close out now, and I will listen to Leo.
But I just wanted to make sure I was super respectful of y'all time and make sure y'all got all the public information because I knew I only had you for an hour, if you will. So
let us close out because Leo's great.
Yeah. Share your information. Yeah, but now thank y'all for being willing to stay on. I know you were just trying to make sure I was good for the rest of the show, so I appreciate
that.
But if you will share that information. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Latrice. But yeah, go ahead and get y'all information out so I can go to this top of the hour break and we'll continue this morning's discussion. But thank both of you for coming on. Great discussion this morning.
You can follow us at Let's Win for America Action, which is LWFAA.com. That's LWFAA.com. That's Kelvin's organization that I helped co-found with him. And we're messaging, so we're really taking over messaging, so we're having a lot of these discussions. And then for my media stuff, you can go to allthingsjking.com, and that's allthingsjking.com, and you'll find all of my media stuff on there. So, I look forward to having more discussions like this. I really, really appreciated Gerald's response. I took notes, and I'm definitely going to make sure that I drive that on my side. And that we no longer, you know, we try not to overlook people that are in need. I really appreciated that question.
Good stuff. Kevin, any last thought from you? Oh, yeah, go ahead, Latrice. Please, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I want to follow up, I guess, offline. When we did this call, maybe we were on the podcast maybe a year ago. You said you were going to look into the lack of ability to easily access birth control for black women in the black community. So I'll follow up with you on that offline to see what you found and anything that's any progress that's been made on that.
Absolutely.
Yep. Kevin, any last thoughts? I got to go to the break, brother. Thanks a lot for coming on this morning.
Oh, no, no, no. Just thanks a lot. Please consider some of the conservative principles or Republican policies. Speak with people that can speak in detail about them and how it applies to you and your life, because I believe that facts, truth, and evidence is the most powerful teacher, and that's what we need to try to find, not just talking points and narratives that we typically hear.
No, thanks a lot. Thank you both. We'll see you. Talk to y'all soon. Thank y'all for coming to the live experience last night. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
Hey, where did you get that hat and t-shirt? I like that.
Oh, I got this at moneymotivation.com. It's fresh, right?
Yes, and I love the message on it, too. You are the hustle, huh?
That's what the shirt says. I am the hustle. They embody the entrepreneurial spirit, and what I like the most, it's more than a brand. It's a lifestyle for those who want to put in the work and expect to have the finer things in life. I also follow them on Instagram. Check this post out.
If you believe money is the root of all evil, you're using it wrong?
Or how about this one? Excuses made $0 an hour.
I like those. What's their IG?
At moneymotivation.co.
But do they have any ladies gear?
Yes, you're going to love the clothing line they got for the ladies. Matter of fact, pull up their website, moneymotivation.com, and I'm going to get you a few things so we can both look like money.
Everywhere I go, go, and everywhere I be, I don't even talk, talk. They still know it's me, because I look like money, smell like money, talk like money, even walk like money.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Latrice Ross. This morning's discussion question: what would you ask a black Republican? We just had on special guests Kevin and Janelle King from the GOP. We're going to bring on another special guest with us this morning, if you will, Brother Leo Smith. He's been with us before. Love having returning guests. We love to have these amazing conversations. So if you do a great job, we bring you back. So if you will, Leo, thank you, King, for being on with us this morning. If you'll say hello to the intellectual outcast, as I now call my listeners, and give people a little bit of your background as we continue this morning's discussion. What would you ask a black Republican? Thanks for being with us, King.
Good morning. Good morning, Montoya. How are you today?
Doing great, brother.
Well, great. This is Leo Smith. I am a long political strategist in the Republican Party. You just had Janelle and Kelvin King on. Janelle, when she was Janelle Jones, was one of my mentees working as a minority engagement ambassador when I was an executive with the Georgia GOP. And, you know, one of the big things that I love to see happening, when we expand the black reach into politics across ideology, we also expand our access to the tables of power that make decisions on how resources are applied to the problems of society. And when you can use a black Republican, do so. And as you ended your show, I saw promises made, and I pray that those promises will be kept on how they can help people get access to the people that they're talking to. So thank you for your show, Montoya.
Now, I appreciate you, and thank you for your willingness to participate in these conversations. For anybody that was listening in the first hour, I will openly highlight politics and religion are typically the two areas, as much as we love to have the difficult conversations on race, sex, and culture. And I'm, again, kind of repeating this for anybody that tuned in later. This is an area we don't delve into a lot of time because I like to have conversations. I think we had a decent conversation, and I know with you, brother, that's what I've always appreciated, that we have conversations. Again, similar to the last caller, I am independent for various reasons. And then when we talk particularly the black community, if you will, I actually said this at the live experience last night. I have a book called Reeducation of the Negro, and one of my pieces that's directed at black Republicans in the opening of it, I, in a sense, whatever cultural values that we kind of say that the black community has. Obviously, we're not a monolith, but if we generalize those cultural values, I personally find it difficult for the black community to be lined up with either party, and I kind of, in a sense, threw that, you know, if you will, out there. So I think I want to start with you, if you will, and then Therese can back me up and jump in and, you know, ask her questions as well. But what I think where I want to start is I personally, in particular, when it comes to black people, I struggle to be, like the last caller, on either side of the party. And so I just wanted to hear your thoughts as a GOP strategist. Do you, in a sense, understand that particular thinking? Because I think I find more black people moving in that direction. So I was, that's my question to you. What do you think of that, in, you know, just personally?
Oh, no, you're absolutely. I'm with you, Montoya, but I'm not just with you. Jefferson Franklin Long, the first black American to speak on the U.S. congressional floor, a black Republican from Georgia, from Macon to be exact, he felt the same way, that the black Americans don't have a political party. But Jefferson Franklin Long, way back in the 1800s, is not the only one who felt that way. Even today, most Americans feel that neither the Democrat or the Republican Party is best for them. In other words, most Americans either don't vote or register themselves as independent. And as far as a block of voters, if there were to be an independent party, it would be the largest party in American history. And it is the fastest growing number of affiliated voters in American politics today, the independent voter. Now, the black people haven't been an aspirational idea in this Democratic Republic, meaning the more fabric of America and its founding as a capitalistic commodity that also brought more value to capitalism, that the black people have not been a manifestation of that aspirational idea because they have not been empowered or self-empowered, meaning empowered by the system or empowered by choice, in order to lead with that aspirational model. And until that aspirational model, the highest idea of being a participatory, empowering, you know, liberty and freedom-oriented Democratic Republic exists, the black American doesn't have a political party. And more white Americans are feeling that way too. Again, black Americans leading the idea that the system can be better. So just like Jefferson Franklin Long, the black Republican speaking on the U.S. congressional floor, black Americans often find themselves being shut out by the issues related to race and racism. And in transcending those issues now, today, is more of an issue of economic opportunity and educational access.
All right. Thank you for that thought. Latrice, any thoughts or questions for our guest?
Yeah. So I too, am an independent. I am actually a progressive-leaning independent because a lot of the conservative values, I feel that the government has no place in defining a woman's right to choice and things of that nature. I do like your response with regard to Montoya's question around being an independent. I think that neither party serves black people well, and that is why that was my reason for becoming an independent. So I will ask this. What do you think from a policy perspective that Republicans could do to have a positive impact on some of the issues that are prevalent in our community?
Well, you know, one thing that we have to do, Latrice, is Republicans in particular, and I'll speak because I am largely identified as a Republican strategist. My work for over 25 years has been primarily with Republican legislators, Republican and conservative advocacy groups, et cetera. And one thing that we can do is the Republican Party itself, and luckily, things are in such a bad state of affairs that even many Democrats are starting to see that they need to be open and the Republicans need to be nurtured back into accepting actually Republican values. Republican values like building the essential economic unit, which is the American family, the most powerful unit that is the best determinant of whether or not you will struggle in poverty or have access to middle-class society and the potential to grow from there, that we need to assert educational freedom and liberty so that we can have a choice of education that fits not only our aptitude, but also our financial choices that we can choose to make for ourselves so that we can better ourselves according to the needs of society and industry. So to even just embrace those traditional platforms that classical liberal conservatives have always fundamentally believed in, family, work opportunity, and the freedom on education. The Republicans would just simply focus back on those traditional conservative values that they've had, strong national defense, those things added, then they will find controversial things that push people away from the party will be insignificant. They will be, as Ronald Reagan said, they will be the 20% of minutia that people don't care much about because the main things are made the main things: economy, educational access, a strong national defense, a sense of American nationalism, not cultural nationalism. So these kinds of things that the Republican Party would embrace again, they're not going to get everybody as no party should, but they will find foundational strength in that mud seal, foundational things that we can build something on, and then the party will be strong again.
Let me real quick. There's a lot of callers out there. If you're listening via the phone, we love that. So no problem if that's how you want to listen. If you are a new caller, a lot of new callers missed this. So I hope you're hearing me clearly right now. If you're actually wanting to ask a question, you can press 1, and we will let you join the discussion as well. For those online that are listening online, the number to get in is 646-787-1691. Again, that's 646-787-1691, and you press 1, and we'll let you join the conversation. If you will, Leo, you and I have had some discussions, and I'll say it this way, as serious as politics is, if you will, I'll say it like this. When it comes to, in a sense, playing politics, we quite often delve into what I would say is, and I'm generalizing here, that there are aspects of how to play politics, realizing that it is a give-and-take situation that often, and again, I'm generalizing, that the black community, I, in a sense, would say we misunderstand how to play politics. And I would say that from the standpoint of part of that being us, in a sense, late in our ability to participate fully in the system or whatever. We kind of know the history of that or whatever. So in a sense, being newer with the opportunity to participate in the system, I think quite often we do get divided between the extremes and don't have a concept of how to acknowledge, if you will, the other side in a way that's beneficial. For example, something that happened here in Georgia. I was down at the Capitol, if you will, got invited by this other group and went down there to find, when it comes to, for example, policing and that type of legislation, that some of the legislation is starting to lean towards something that we talked about in the last hour, the idea of over-policing. I've seen that we're having leanings in this state particular where we're going to, in a sense, possibly get into some more over-policing. But prior to this point, Georgia had a pretty decent record, even under Kemp, when it came to this, for example, shutting down jails. And so that's not something that has been pointed out as a thing that we care about in the community. And I use that as an example to say we missed the opportunity to play politics when we only acknowledge the extremes and say, well, we can't say, we're not going to say what the one side or the other side, if you will, has done good. It'll never be mentioned, and not playing politics hurts us, if I'm making sense with all of that. But go ahead, brother. Again, I know we've talked about this to a degree.
No. That's very cogent. I heard a couple of questions in there, Montoya, and I'm going to sort of try to get to a couple of them right away. I mean, just starting from the back, from the front to the back here with your question set. You know, Americans, we've gone throughout history with challenges, tragedy, hardship, injustices, opportunities that we've lost, and opportunities that we've won. But overall, we have a history of doing good. You know, there's been a little squabble between Barack Obama, and I think I heard Janelle mention that in your show before I hopped on. I was listening. And she mentioned a little bit about a squabble between Barack Obama and President Barack Obama and Senator Tim Scott. But both those gentlemen would have to agree that if America didn't have a history of doing good from its bad, then neither one of them would have had the opportunity to serve the country in the way that they have. So they have that to share in common because of our history of doing good. And that might be some of the point not so eloquently made like me that Tim Scott's trying to make when he says, you know, well, how could I be here without, you know, if we have racism? I mean, that's kind of a sophomore kind of equivocation to suggest that just because I exist, there is no racism. But you know, he's not a sociologist or psychologist. You know, he's an insurance salesman. So I don't expect him to be, you know, methodology to be
exact. He's going to fumble. He has a better point, but he's going to fumble in making the point. He's going to fumble.
But we have this thing. And the other thing that you started out with when you talk about black people and learning to have access and power in the sharing of resources, which is the political process, we have to remember. And we have to give us some grace, but not so much that we end up letting us fall off a cliff. We need to have a tough love and understanding about black people. Just think about this. Just last week, I celebrated 59th birthday. And that means that I was born in 1964, a year at which, just 59 years ago, my mother did not have full voting rights. So let's think about it this way. Oh, white people have full access to swimming in a pool. You can't have access to a swimming pool without all kinds of tests and obstructions and barriers. How many white swimmers would we have today? Just 60 years later. Takes a while. Takes a while to develop the chops, the skill sets, the infrastructure, the community longing. You don't have any generational transfer of knowledge from generations before, from as early as 1700 when political systems were created. Black people were being oppressed and kept out of the process. So how are we to have this knowledge of managing governance and government? So, yes, it makes sense that we don't know how to play in politics. Why is it that HBCUs are just figuring out they ought to have a lobby to advocate for them at the legislature for money, resources, and power? They're just getting it. Just starting.
Exactly.
So we've got catch up to do, and what I fear is that while we may still need to learn that we've got this thing, in other words, in order to fix your problem, to be more competitive in the game, you got to realize what skill sets you need to work on in order to be competitive in that game. And if you're not acknowledging that your crossover dribble is lacking because you just started playing basketball, you ain't going to get better at a crossover dribble. So black people need to first acknowledge, black leaders, black educators, black clergy need to acknowledge that we need political acumen and we need to get it from anywhere we can learn it, as long as it works and has proof of concept. Let me add that to it. Just don't get any junk. You ain't going to go trying to learn basketball for somebody who can't deal on the court.
Right.
Make sure you're learning from knowledgeable, experienced people, not Ray Ray and Buki just because they say they know something.
Well, I appreciate that. Latrice, any questions or any thoughts to, you know, just even what I mentioned? Again, you know, I love that layout because, again, I wanted to be aware and give that grace that, you know, I'm not downing saying we don't know how to play like and downing us, you know what I mean? But I am clarifying that ultimately part of learning how to play is the give and take. And I think I actually would highlight, I think it's more difficult in the social media age to even understand that give and take. Again, that's just my thoughts on it. Your thoughts, Queen?
No, I think that we definitely have tremendous amount of education that needs to take place so that we can build up our political acumen. But I see that play out sort of in the work that I do. Working in diversity, equity, and inclusion, I find that a lot of the issues for folks who don't like the work that I do come from a place of not understanding, not having the education to understand. So I do agree with that, but I actually have a different question.
Yeah, please go ahead.
One of the things that triggers me. I'm sorry?
He said, thank you for your work.
Thank you for your work at DEI, because I have a feeling that I have a feeling that you're, and I don't mean to redirect you, but I have a feeling that your approach to DEI is much different than a lot of progressive left.
Thank you. One of the things that triggers me, and it's important to understand and know your triggers, is when people imply that black people need to pull themselves up by the bootstrap. And my response, I have to actually pause, breathe, and then respond because I know that that's a trigger of mine.
Right.
Because when we think about bootstrapping, you know, when our ancestors were freed from slavery, they had to rebuild their lives with nothing. But then when we think about how the middle class was built, when we think about the Homestead Act of 1862, where they were, you know, white people were given land that was stolen from the indigenous folk who were here first. When we think about the GI Bill, that black veterans coming home from war were not privy to those benefits.
Right.
When we think about even when the income tax system was incorporated, black people who worked contributed to it, but they got none of the social benefits from it. I lost my train of thought. But I guess
you're saying the bootstrapping kind of triggers you. The bookstrap. I'm trying to trigger her to remember what she wanted to ask.
Right.
Trying to trigger her.
I kind of have it.
Okay, gotcha.
So when I think about policy, we see, or even when we think about reparations, what are your thoughts around that? Because when we think about how black folk had to start from less than nothing to rebuild lives, and every step of the way, politicians on both sides of the aisle have implemented policy achieving. The fact that black folk won't achieve wage parity for 95 years at the current rate, the fact that the black-white wealth gap is widening instead of decreasing. What are your thoughts around, or can you share with us what the Republican Party is doing to have a positive impact on those issues?
Well, the Republican Party, the issue of bootstrap is just, you know, let's be clear, that's rhetorical weaponry, okay? So when someone throws out pull yourself up by your bootstrap, what they're generally doing is showing a lack of ability to talk about policy, systemic as well as aspirational policy in a constructive way. That's sort of like saying you're stupid when you're in a fight and you're in a verbal, you know, spat with somebody, and you don't have an argument against what they just said, so you just say you're stupid. And let's just be clear about that, okay? So to say to someone, pull yourself by your bootstrap without explaining what that means is showing a little intellectual inability. And that's what happens a lot. And people do it also because in segments that are short-form media, they have to get out of their soundbite. And so that's a good way of just saying something without saying anything, you know. And the fact is that all Americans have to pull themselves up, you know, as Jesus Christ says, Lazarus, pick up your bed and walk. All Americans have to do what they can to help themselves, and all Americans pretty much do. Even a baby coming out of the womb pulls himself up by the bootstrap by trying to get out. They actually do make a sound when they get smacked to say, hello, I am here. That saying, look, feed me, love me, hold me. That's self-affirming. And that's all pulling yourself back. So the concept is a fine concept, but we've got to talk about structurally and politically, what does it mean? And, you know, so I don't like to talk about it like that. I like to talk about what are we doing to empower people to be self-determinant, to have work, and therefore get value and self-worth and self-esteem through work, to get dignity. And how do we design a structural system that has a safety net? Yes, because everybody, as you see all these white folks strung out on opioids and all kinds of other stuff, as they face some of the political and economic realities that black people have long faced, as they struggle and become snowflakes in a more metaphysical, anthropomorphical reality that they are struggling like black people did the crack epidemic in the early 80s. And now suddenly we say, okay, drug course made sense. You know? Suddenly we need to deal with mental health issues as white kids are having more and more suicide. So in other words, the majority have some of these problems with the bootstrap before we start to understand systemically we do need to have bootstrap systems in society. So one of the things you see happening here, Latrice, I think is an opportunity, is to redefine and reshape the discussion on what is a bootstrap. Is DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, is it a bootstrap, or it is a hangman's noose around your neck? Well, it depends on how you use it. Is it a tourniquet if it actually stops bleeding and you can measure the stopping of bleeding? So if I'm using diversity, equity, and inclusion in affirmative action at a university, or if I'm using it in a company, am I increasing the ability of the company to stop leaking money, leaking customers, leaking employees? Is it functional, right? But what's happened in American society is we've gotten into ideological arguments without functional value. And it will strengthen all of American society if we measured the benefit of everything to make sure that the bootstrap that we design actually works and doesn't make a person dependent or doesn't hinder people. Like you say, you give somebody too much work, they'll hang themselves. So that, you know, for instance, if I had the strict libertarian view and I said, well, here's a bootstrap. If people want to use drugs in order to, like, you know, live their life, I want to give them the liberty to live their life. Well, that's giving somebody such a long bootstrap that they can hang themselves. We would lose massive segments of society if we legalize all drugs, illicit drugs. So in other words, I think we have an opportunity in this metamorphosis of society that we're having right now with a DEI being attacked, with affirmative action being attacked, with what kind of education we teach. We now, especially black people, and me as a black conservative, we have an opportunity to talk about what's functional, what actually works. Kemp, for instance, and I see what's happening down in Florida and around the world where they're attacking certain programs that have taken on more cultural value, like DEI and like affirmative action, some things like that, than functional value. I am reasserting the functional need for certain programs. And I'm reasserting a set of metrics to measure the value of certain programs. Democrats, liberals need to do that more often.
Thank you for that.
I love what you're saying. Go ahead.
It runs deeper than that because I brought up two specific issues. Wage parity for black people. At the current rate that we're going, black people won't be paid equitably to their white colleagues for 95 years. That impacts a black person's ability to build wealth, which we know by, if you read the research, that the black-white wealth gap is also increasing. We look at redlining, we look at how our homes are valued.
Yeah. Can I address that? Right. I want to answer your question because you did bring that up very specifically. That is brilliantly said. Now let me ask you something, Latrice. I'm going to answer your question by asking another question, thinking about ways to decrease the pay gap between professionals who are entrepreneurial, professionals who might work with the government, professionals who might work in the corporate world. You know, three sectors, right? Do we talk more about that, or do we discuss more racial inequity?
Give me a pan or give me some kind of vegetable.
I just don't want to order lunch or something.
I have no idea where that's coming from, y'all.
Bear with me.
One or the other.
Right, and then the other one, because you want to say one.
Line open. I got to figure out which line is open. Let her choose.
I'm going to take all the lines off, and I'll figure it out. Give me a second.
Both are in there.
Okay.
Let her choose one, and you'll have the dinner. You have that and this and
whatever. And
whatever
she does.
Okay. Right.
All right, can y'all hear me now? I'm sorry, I had a line open. I do apologize. I didn't realize I had a line open by accident. Y'all do forgive me for that. I've never done that before. All right, hold on. Can y'all hear me? Hold on, I can't hear y'all. Hold on one second. Everybody work with me, y'all. My computer's. Oh, all right, y'all. Give me a second. Y'all should only be able to hear me right now. Do forgive me, y'all. Oh man. So we lost Leo and Latrice, so give me a second. I was trying to close the line and end up taking everybody off. Y'all should be able to hear me now. Give me a second to get both of them back on the air. Oh, man, we were at a very good point, too. I was blowing the commercials because the conversation was so good. So, and I see a lot of callers want to get in as well. So if y'all want to get in, y'all do have to press 1. Let me keep telling y'all that while I'm getting them back on the air. Again, I do apologize. Got knocked offline earlier, so I'm having to do things from my phone, so it's a little harder to see things, so just bear with me. I always say technology is great until it doesn't work, so just bear with me, y'all. I'm having to get back, trying to get back into the computer so I can avoid this going on the rest of the way. All right, I'm pretty sure y'all can hear me. I think I did hit that button. I was muted for a second, and I should be the only voice out here right now. So just bear with me, y'all. I'm trying to get logged back in to get them back into the discussion. Great discussion this morning. So definitely grateful to both our first hour guests, Janelle and Kevin. And now we have on Leo Smith for anybody that may just be tuning in, GOP strategist. And my special guest co-host is Latrice Ross in the DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion space. And right now I'm just kind of talking y'all through to get them back online so they can continue their brilliant discussion. So just give me a second to get back online, and we'll continue that discussion. Come on, computers, go faster. All right, I'm restoring my space, and I should have them on here in a second. And if y'all can't hear me right now, everybody's cut out. So I know everybody's like, oh, the show just stopped. So hopefully y'all can hear me right now. And again, I can't see the board to see if I'm active. I think I'm active, and y'all should be hearing me right now. Just waiting for my computer to reload here. And it would happen to reload extremely slow right now, much slower than usual. But cause that's how it goes when you have technical issues. Let me see here. All right, y'all. Let's see. Give me a second. Let's see if it's gonna load. I have to load this to get them back on. All right, good. I got one of my listeners letting me know y'all can't hear me. All right, so y'all can't hear me. Again, I'm talking y'all through to get Leo and Latrice back on. I'm almost there, y'all. Here we go. Give me a second. We got about 30 minutes. I'm gonna go commercial free just to maximize the time we have with our guests the rest of the way now that we've lost this time. So if many of my sponsors are listening, I will give y'all an extra week on your sponsorships. Let me find their numbers and bring them back live. All right, here we go. We're almost there. I got a lot of y'all out there. If y'all want to get in, please. Some of y'all did press one, so we'll get to y'all as well. All right, here's Leo. Leo, you're back live. Let me get Latrice. Matter of fact, you can go ahead. And I think you were trying to respond to her when everything got cut off. So you can kind of pick up, and I'll get Latrice on as well. Go ahead, Leo. Thank you. Thank you for holding while that happened.
All right, no problem. Mic check. Can you hear me, Montoya?
Yep, mic check. We're good to go, brother. Appreciate you.
All right. Well, look, as I was saying, I'll make this quick because it sounds like you've got some callers, and you guys are just asking awesome questions. You know, when we talk about bootstraps, and let's talk about specifically what can we do to deal with that economic gap the wage gap that Latrice brought up is a very real thing. But it changes when you adjust for certain achievements.
Mm-hmm.
The achievement of having a traditional family, the wage gap decreases massively. The achievement mm-hmm. of getting a four-year education or an apprenticeship skill, a skill, the wage gap almost disappears, you know. But yet, even those people who graduate with four-year degrees are going to face some racism. They're going to face some obstacles in life. They're still going to. But it decreases that gap tremendously. And then there's the issue that is a harder issue to address, and that is the fact that white Americans are still the majority in American society. And when you take away from even the white American majority, those immigrants that have come here with very much a capitalistic mentality. And so they come here to take advantage of the capitalistic system that America has, whereas black Americans often culturally, because of the history of race and oppression and Jim Crow exceptionalism, then we therefore, in our country's exceptional difference on how we treated blacks in capitalism, we black Americans, descendants of American slavery, have less of an less affinity towards capitalism. So we have to fix that on the back end, and that's within our culture and race we have to fix that. But then and sociologists, psychologists, DEI people have to deal with this issue of ownership of that problem of how do we cope and live with capitalism, okay? We oftentimes will say stuff like, well, I like socialism, but that's not the system you're in. And so we gotta constructively deal with that. And then on the front side, we've got to deal with what I just defined earlier as some of the Republican principles, like traditional American family. We've got to embrace those things. I used to tell my white progressive liberals when I used to be in an AME church, and they'd come and hear me preach at Virginia Tech and other places when I was preaching, because I had to because of the black tradition. I said, look, be open-minded, but don't let your brain fall out. Black people have not had the long-term systemic advantages that you, the white liberal, have had in creating family, having the ability to assert a man or a woman as a provider in a family without having the system push back at them. Again, grace be given to us, but again, no, here are the things that helped us in the 1920s, 30s, and 40s as black families and creating black opportunity. Here are the things that helped us make big moves. But now we are culturally identifying with some progressive leftist movement that is watering those very things that made us strong down. And we need to address that honestly.
Yeah, I love that. Latrice, I got you back live too, just so you know, Queen. I just want to say this real quick again. What I hear right now is trying, in a sense, to have a smarter conversation, in particular, for example, to this wealth gap. And in the research that I do, obviously not the same or to the degree that you do, Latrice. Again, this is your space, and obviously you do this for a living and love it, as you mentioned in the very beginning. But I do agree with Leo in this sense, that the smarter part of the conversation is to have that dialogue from, quote-unquote, both ends of it. And in a sense, to his point, as he just pointed out, within particular issues, while, like you say, when you generalize the, is that, I'm pretty sure I only have you two open now. I think I hear some background noise. I'm trying to make sure I don't do what I have.
I just made it myself.
Okay, got you. I didn't know if it was, I opened up the line again. Okay, but anyway, and so, what I love about what Leo's saying is when you get into the particulars, there is a reality that the gap can dissipate almost completely, especially in newer professions, because the unfortunate reality, and this is not defending the wealth gap, it's just having a better conversation. The unfortunate reality, when it is grouped all together, it's a lot of what Leo talked about, is a lot is baked in. Baked in meaning when you just lump it by race only, then you're going to have the unfortunate lumped in of those who were in, especially long-term industry that have been around forever, that are already baked in at the higher salaries when you literally could, even at a entry-level job, pay a different wealth, a different pay, outside of moving
into
the... Yeah, go ahead, Leo.
Let me just give. I'm gonna give a real quick, example.
Okay, yeah, go ahead, brother.
I'm gonna give two.
Okay, go ahead.
A lot of black people work in the civil rights industry, right? And a lot of the civil rights industry are run by black people, or progressive left. But yet the pay gap between a black person working in civil rights and a white person in civil rights is immense. And so that's an issue of we can control it ourselves. Remember when Bernie Sanders got really criticized for his staff, all his people being paid so little in his campaign? You know, so we need to make that critique. The other thing is that we need to also not make the mistake of being so focused on race as the delimiter. For instance, at Atlanta Classical Academy, a school in prominent Buckhead that I helped found, our school, where I still sit on the board of directors at Atlanta Classical, has seen an incredible decrease in the academic achievement gap between kids from Bolton Road who are single-parent family and poverty, and white kids living in Buckhead from two-parent traditional families with multiple generations of PhDs. The way that we meet that need is not to focus on their race, but we focus on the economic disadvantage that doesn't provide them the tools to achieve or the support that they would get from a family we know isn't there. So therefore, when COVID hits, we know that the white kid who is wealthy is going to get tutors, they're going to get special services, they're going to have the right computer set up, they're going to get four meals a day when they're at home. But we know that the black kid, not because they're black, not my children, not my 15 and 17-year-old, they're going to be fine because they're economically privileged, my children. Black but privileged. They don't need affirmative action, my two black kids. They don't. But a poor kid does. And so it would be wrong for me to say, let's make a policy at Atlanta Classical that solely focuses on race as who needs help, because my kids wouldn't have needed it. And then I would be withholding resources from a poor, poverty, single-parent child on Bolton Road, who, by the way, we just had one, a black young lady, get a full scholarship for fencing at Harvard University. And after she graduates from Harvard, thank you, and after she, school choice, after she graduates from Harvard, guess what? Her children probably won't need affirmative action.
Go ahead, Latrice, if you can come back live. Go ahead and give any response.
First off, there were a few things that you said that I actually disagreed with. One of the things you said that completely threw me was that white liberals have had advantages. White people have had advantages. So I want to be clear, right, left, progressive, conservative, white people have had the privilege, not just white liberals. This isn't a liberal or conservative issue, what I'm talking about. When it comes to college education, a lot of times the black people with college degrees will make less than a white person with a high school diploma or even a GED. And this cuts across the board, industries, levels within the organization, all of it. And you're right, it doesn't just apply to race, because this is mental dialogue and we're talking about race at this point. It applies to gender. It applies to sexual orientation. It applies to immigration status. It applies to age. All of those inequities exist. But the largest inequity that exists is the wealth, is the race-wage inequity. And so I do agree with you saying, with your comment about the traditional nuclear family. I've made this point several times at Mental Dialogue that it's important that we look at how we procreate, and that we do so in a manner that's conducive for us to build wealth. So having a traditional nuclear family and not having a child here and a child there and a child somewhere else will definitely contribute to building of wealth. What I don't want to happen here is, and this is what I hear often when I talk to conservatives about wage inequity, is push back and say that, you guys have to look at this differently. There's nothing to look at differently. 9 times out of 10, when you look at the top tier of an organization, it's made of people that don't look like me. The companies that I work with, they often acknowledge, yes, our board of directors is white. Yes, our executive team is white. Yes, the level below that is white. And 9 times out of 10, the level below that is primarily white. They are the ones who determine the wages. And so when we look at COVID, our community was invariably impacted tremendously because many of them were the lower level, lower paid essential workers who had to be out and about stocking the shelves, driving the buses, picking up the trash, not because they weren't qualified, but because they were not given that opportunity. We go to college. Many of us graduate with college degrees, and we come out and we still have to take lesser paying roles because that's all we can get. And we have to provide for our family. And oftentimes, it's not until recently where there's more wage transparency that folks are beginning to understand just how underpaid we are. I have a friend who works for Cisco.
So Latrice, I get it.
But what I'm saying is, first, I'm asking to jump in because I get the example after the example after the example. I'm not trying to disagree with you, but I'm instead of another example, what I would want to have, because the examples, you can make them clear. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just highlighting versus another example. What I'm asking is, what does it look like for you as someone in DEI of how do you handle it from your perspective versus another example? That's I just want to see I just want to know what do you think is a way to handle what you're saying is an issue, because I've told you openly, I think but wage transparency has been around for not just recently, in my opinion, just from what I can look up. And again, I'm not against you. I'm just highlighting that. And I think you've agreed with lower level stuff, with lower positions, that most people are not professionals. The wage gap isn't as obvious as we're pointing out. At professional level, it's definitely different for a lot of the reasons that you talked about. So what does that look like in your opinion from a political standpoint of what efforts could be made to close the gap? Can you just like an idea of what that looks like?
Political strategist here, but I will say from a DEI perspective, what I find when I go into an organization, I say, let's begin with an audit. Let's look at your processes and procedures. Let's look not just your policies and your procedures, but your practices, because oftentimes employees will adapt the procedures to fit how they work. And oftentimes in those practices, they create more inequity. And so it's important that we assess where you are. I know what I'm working with. When I bring that up, more organizations will say, no, I don't want to take that route than those who do. What that says to me is you really don't want to know the truth. You want to give window dressing or a performative throw to DEI, but you don't really want to make the real sustainable change. And that's what needs to happen. Black employees, oftentimes we're condemned or criticized for job hopping. But that's how a lot of times black people are able to increase their pay.
No, that makes sense. So let me throw this back. No, that makes sense. So let me throw that back because I am trying to, again, like you're living that out as a DI, person, right? You just live out that example. And so now I would try to figure out, in a sense from Leo, is there a perspective in which politics can help with that moment? And because as I hear you, Latrice, and I'm not defending what's happening, but I'm just highlighting when you say they don't want to make that decision, that to me, unfortunately, is the individual who's, may have hired you or brought you in for consulting. And then when they hear your recommendation based on their personal bias, maybe, is why they're not willing to do so. I'm not sure that. I think that's where we get, unfortunately, limited to the heart issue.
It kind of goes back to hiring. I mean, there were policies put in place for making certain that, folks aren't discriminated against in hiring. That kind of policy needs to also happen to ensure that when we are hired, that we're paid equitably as those who may be white, who have, the similar qualifications and experience, that we also receive pay equity according to that. That's not happening.
And what you're saying now, what you're saying now, would you make that in reference to professional positions? Because at regular salary, regular jobs where that has to be open now, it just is what it is. But at professionals,
I don't think the distinction needs to be made between professional or non-professional. I think it just
it has to be made when there's not a true that's not what happens at non-professional positions. Like, it doesn't matter what you are race wise. Like, if you get this position, it pays this. And then that range may be about 2,000 or 3,000. So that I'm saying that's kind of set at non-professional positions. That's why I think it has to be distinguished.
It doesn't have to be. You just put it for everyone to ensure that it happens. I don't think that there needs to be a distinction between professional and you clarify, but even in that clarification, I still don't think that there needs to There needs to be a distinction. There needs to be a distinction made between the professional level and non-professional level. I think that it just needs to be made. It says if you hire someone, they should be paid equitably according to their education and their level of experience. There should be no distinction in pay based on race, et cetera, race, gender, what have you.
All right, let me let Leo jump back in here. I'm kind of moving and jumping around on the – I just missed him. I don't want to be dropped by accident. Oh, dang, I think Leo may – oh, there – no, here – no. Leo, you may have dropped, brother. Oh, man, I just was about to bring him back in. Hey, y'all got to forgive me today, man, with this. Okay, here it is. I got him. Oh. All right, hold on, brother. All right, there we go. I see him. All right, we got another caller wants to jump
my
in caller, as well.
Can
so
you hear me or not?
Yeah, I can hear you now, brother. I dropped. I was just trying to get the background noise out or whatever,
trying to figure out where it was.
Go ahead. All right, go ahead, brother.
There's a lot of what Latrice is saying that I actually totally agree with. But there's the what, right? There's the end. But then there's the means, right? So Latrice is speaking about pay inequity, and she's using, I won't even say that they're anecdotal. I will say that there's a body of evidence that demonstrates that systemically white Americans are advantaged in most corporations. There's good research on this. Jonathan Haidt, American behavioral sociologist, behavioral economist, a liberal, has done incredible research on this work just for generational, meaning the young hipster CEO is going to create a culture and an environment that actually is less discriminatory based on race. They're more discriminatory based on tribe, based on where you went to college and who you know and stuff like that than they are on race, which actually sort of muddies the water and makes you think that it's based on race because birds of a feather too often flock together. And so therefore you think that some reasons for pay inequities are all purely race when sometimes they're just because friends help friends get better jobs and make sure they advocate for them to get pay raises. So some of the answer to that is more black business ownership so that we're employing each other and not inserting some of the same pay inequity quality issues. But we also need to do more on the supply side of economics and make sure that, that black people who start businesses get access to the big contracts that the federal government might have and therefore can pay people better when they do hire black people to work for them. Because it's not just whether or not a black person wants to make sure that black people are paid well when they work for them, but do they have the ability to pay well because they have enough excess revenue and they don't have as much overhead so that they can do that and still maintain their bottom line? Do they have enough venture capital? Have black people learned how to buy a little less of a house and spend more on investing in other people's businesses? Have we learned to do that? Issues are, I agree, systemic. They are tribal. And the tribe called white is bigger than the tribe called black, a lot bigger. And so it makes sense that you're going to have some pay inequities just because it's baked in, as you said, Montoya. But Latrice, the methodology for proving the need for DEI, I think, needs some work. And what I'm saying to you is that when I was an administrator in affirmative action and equal opportunity at Virginia Tech, I was a DEI professional. But what I saw was a lack of effort to actually specifically address black access to capital, to empowerment, to education. And I saw other types of diversity taking precedence, and I got out of the industry.
Okay.
Nah, that's strong. Hey, real quick, sorry to cut the conversation. I got to get Brother Kevin on because I didn't get him last week. He calls too often for me not to let him sneak into this thing with only a few minutes to go. I'm sorry, Brother Kevin. I had a bunch of technical difficulties, so you got to just do a quick comment. We only got 4 minutes, so you can't go long as you normally do, brother. But I owed you getting you in today. So just give me a quick thought, man, so we can close this thing out. I'm sorry I got you in so late.
Yeah, no, you're good. Patrice is 100 on what you just said. But here's the problem I have when we talk about the black conservatives. They make it sound real good when they're in our audience. But when they get in those audiences of white folk or any other kind of folk, the story totally changes. And they side with the other side, and they don't check the other side for their discriminatory practices. And then when it comes home, like, you know, it sounds good to say, all right, these benefits and equality, we shouldn't focus on race. You have to focus on race because they use their tactics to focus on race about us. From us ownership, loaning, giving us loans, the discriminatory practices, the laws that they pass, red line, you name it, gentrification. They push those agendas, and those agendas are based strictly around race. So this is the misconception and the deception by many so-called black conservatives because they ignore that.
Thank you for your thoughts, brother. I got to get, like I said, we got to shut this thing down, but thank you for your thoughts. Uh-huh. And I'll just briefly, you know, I'll briefly say this to you. And so I think the benefit of, quote-unquote, learning to play politics, as we kind of mentioned with on this show, I think the benefit is having people be steadfast in either party to do to do the opposite of what you just suggested. Yeah, I'm pretty sure there are black servants who do exactly what you said, Kevin. I stand on the friends that I have, in a sense, within the party that I know personally, that they are still standing up, and the more people that do that, the more benefits, because race, unfortunately, is a real factor in this country. But thank you for your thoughts, King. With that said, Matrice, we got a couple of minutes, so I'm going to just shoot it back to Leo real quick because I don't know if he has any public information he wants to get out of. Again, sorry for the technical difficulties for everybody out there listening. But Leo, if there's any public information you would like to share, kind of do it at this time and a quick thought, and I'm going to let Matrice have the last minute of the show just because, again, how the show went. Thank y'all for being on with me, though. But thank you so much, both of you.
Yeah, thank you for the time, Matrice, Montoya, callers. This has been a good moment. And I just want to, just, you can follow me at Leo Smith Politics on Instagram. I'm not super active on social media, on Twitter. And you can reach me also at leojsmith.com on my website. But, you know, the most important thing is use me for access. If you want to figure out how to get policy implemented, if you want to figure out a government relations strategy that would help you make sure that you achieve the goals that you have, whatever they might be, contact me. See if I can help you out, and that'll prove whether or not my access will empower black people.
No, absolutely, and I will vouch for it, you know, just from my relationship with you. Latrice, you got a minute and a half, whatever you want to say. Sorry again for how, you know, things.
Right.
Thank you for getting on while traveling, so I do appreciate that.
It happens. I just like to say that we have to be mindful on both sides of this to not disparage the issues that really, that are true, that truly, genuinely exist for black people in this country. And push back on us and saying that we need to do this. Because remember, there's a 400-year head start that they've had, and they still hold the privilege. They still hold the power. And so we cannot diminish what that means for us in these roles that we have in corporate America. And, you know, we just have to be open to listening, open to understanding, and not pushing back and saying all the time that black people need to do this. Many of us are doing the work that needs to be done, but we're still being thwarted by the privilege and power that presently exists in this country.
Thank you for your thoughts, Queen. Do you have any public information at this time? I want to make sure I let you get it out if you do.
All of my social media is at Trice Cross, C-R-I-E-R.
All right, thank y'all. Again, a lot of technical difficulties this morning, but I think we had a brilliant conversation. So, see y'all next Saturday. All I ask is that you think.